We're taking inventory this morning. The issues farmers are dealing with and the struggles they face right now are unlike anything that I can remember. So we're going to take inventory, check the priority list of the commodity groups, and try to figure out what's coming next from the White House, from USDA, and from the market.
Live from the brink of liberation via Farm Journal broadcast, woo-hoo! This is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with NCBA President-elect Jerry Bone. Then we've got Kevin Ross, president of the National Corn Growers Association. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drover steers in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, the
morning,
brink
buddy.
Of liberation. Yes. I have something right now that I have not had for the last 2 months.
And what is that?
A haircut appointment.
I was going to say, my household is on the very front line of this reopening. Of course, you know, many of you may know my beloved wife owns a hair salon.
Yes.
And the flood of people seeking appointments is just unbelievable. The things that she needs to put together for her business to be able to function within the law, within the restrictions, within, you know, within the bounds of reasonable safety are just incredible. And I'm anxious to see how this is all going to turn out, but she's busting hard, getting ready. She's going to be open as soon as possible.
Absolutely. It's coming right up. It's coming right up. I know that, I've got to wait until the 26th of May.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
But at least I'm getting in. Wisconsin Supreme Court last night decided, hey, you know what? All this has been unlawful. And there were bars and restaurants open last night.
Sounds like Wisconsin. That's the Wisconsin we know and love.
You know, I'm guessing right now, and I am willing to take this bet with anybody, that there were more than a few brandy old fashions poured in the state of Wisconsin last night.
Maybe even a few brandy newfangleds. I don't know. Maybe something new has come out of this. I'll have one of those, please, and one for my friend.
All right. We've got a lot to cover. Get to it.
Yes, well, Chip, USDA continues to report daily export sales to China. Just this morning, the agency reported export sales of 189,000 metric tons of soybeans. This as Chinese executives say they expect to accelerate ag purchases from the U.S. as crushers report solid profit margins. The focus of the comments were largely on soybean and corn imports as China looks to rebuild and refine its hog production industry, favoring a more traditional feed ration as opposed to, I believe it was roughly half of the nation's hogs there in China were fed off of just garbage, table scraps, etc. Meanwhile, China today has approved imports of U.S. barley, and that kind of goes to the Australia situation, too. A lot to unpack there.
Exactly. Yeah, China is not happy with Australia at all. They're putting some restrictions on what can come in from that country as far as agricultural goods and the tourism from Australia into China. Not like many Aussies would be looking to travel to China right now anyway, but they're basically shutting that down.
Well, Chip, the Trump administration is planning on a temporary change in the rules on H-2B guest workers to help meatpacking plant new operations. A wing of the Homeland Security Department published a temporary rule in today's Federal Register allowing meat and poultry companies to rehire current H-2B employees whose work contracts or three-year visas are expiring. The employers and workers have until September 11 of this year to forge new work contracts, Chip.
All right, making it easier to keep some labor in place. That's got to be some welcome relief in a lot of situations.
House Democrats will vote on their latest $3 trillion coronavirus-related aid package, but GOP leaders are not interested in moving the bill forward in the Senate. The measure would fund mortgage payment assistance, increase SNAP benefits, hazard pay, rebate checks, and election provisions. No House Republicans have supported the proposed bill. Now, Chip, you've continually pointed out, as we've talked about this, that this was billed as a partisan measure, and it looks like that's exactly how it's falling.
Oh, it was presented that way by Pelosi, that this will be a partisan bill. It will be it's going to be huge. there are some provisions in that bill that I think are very worthwhile and much needed to provide some stimulus for the U.S. economy and provide some relief for agriculture specifically. But it's got no chance in the Senate because there's too much of the wish list from the left side of the aisle in this bill.
Yep. Well, USDA back in April said it would investigate meatpackers' cattle buying activities following complaints from some cattle groups, which alleged that meatpackers have used coronavirus-related plant shutdowns to drastically reduce the prices they pay for cattle. Meatpackers' plant closures have shrunk the market for cattle while demand surges at grocery stores, making beef scarcer, leading to higher wholesale prices. Meanwhile, more than 1,000 workers at European slaughterhouses have contracted COVID-19, highlighting the growing challenges the global meat industry faces from the pandemic. And we'll get more from not only Greg, but also our guest in the second segment, Chip.
That's right. We'll save it for that.
Yep. And roughly half of the states in the union have begun lifting coronavirus-related shut-ins with a soft reopening scheduled in many places for tomorrow. New York and New Jersey will allow construction projects to resume non-essential operations, and New York will also allow ag, forestry, and fishing businesses to open. As you said, the Wisconsin Supreme Court overruled Governor Evers' extended stay-at-home order, which was to remain in effect until May 26. Now, Chip, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, testified that reopening the nation too soon could increase, quote, suffering and death among U.S. citizens. That's a claim President Trump found unacceptable. Republicans are beginning to view Fauci as a hindrance to reopening the economy. Chip.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. He's got some qualifiers on there. Could cause the deaths if we open too soon. Those are qualifiers that can later they can look back and say, well, we didn't open too soon. Right. We opened just right, so that's why it didn't happen. Or he could be right. You know, I don't know. Let's bring in Greg Henderson here quick. He's the editorial director at Drovers. Greg, it's good to talk with you again.
Good morning, Chip. How are you?
Good. Let's set the stage. You're going to stick around for the conversation with Jerry coming up here in the second segment, but let's set the stage. What is Tyson doing by cutting beef prices?
Well, Tyson has said that they recognize, I think, that they're making a lot of money and they want to, that beef prices are going up too fast in the store. They've said that they will cut prices 20 to 30% on the box beef that they're sending a lot of those primal cuts to retailers through the end of the week. They didn't say anything about next week. Obviously that choice beef cutout price is a negotiated price. And yesterday, Chip, it was $478 a hundredweight. That's up over $100 since May 1. So, obviously there's plenty of leeway there for Tyson and some of these other companies if they want to reduce that price and take less for it. Other thing to remember is that the meat that's in the store is typically about 4 weeks old. In other words, that animal was slaughtered 4 weeks ago. That's how long this system takes to get that meat there. Yeah. But that's considered fresh, and certainly it's part of the aging process as it goes through.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, we've got a lot of ground that we are going to cover here on the beef side of things. Greg, stick around. We're going to have a conversation next with Jerry Bone, the president-elect of NCBA, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarafly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Telling you, somebody left the gate open again, Davis. Welcome back to Agri Talk. I'm Chip. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hey,
and also with me is the editorial director from Drovers, Greg Henderson. Thanks for sticking around, Greg.
Sure, Chip.
All right, let's get into the conversation here with Jerry Bone. Jerry is with Pratt Feeders out in Kansas, and he is the president-elect of NCBA, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He joins us right now. Jerry, welcome to AgriTalk.
Good morning, Chip, and thank you for the opportunity to visit with you all this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you for making the time. Man, what a time, Jerry. What a time. Greg and I were just talking about what Tyson has decided to do with the beef prices. You know, the beef price is a negotiated price. Can Tyson just knock 20%, 30% off of that price and send it out to their retailers?
You know, it's kind of a surprise that they're doing that this morning, but I think it's a recognition on their part that, you know, these beef prices have gone crazy here during this coronavirus and the packing plants slowdowns that we've seen, and the market is not acting rationally right now, and I think maybe they've decided that they needed to do something to probably be a little more fair in the marketplace.
You know, the market is not acting rationally, but, Jerry, this beef price is supposed to be a negotiated price. And when you look at what's happening in the cash market, the cash cattle market too, Jerry, I don't see a lot of price discovery happening right now. What I see is price setting.
The crisis has caused price discovery to basically evaporate. You know, before the crisis hit, we were barely in balance with supply and demand. And now that we're backing up these cattle, we're probably 3 to 4 weeks backed up in these feed yards. It's a matter of scrambling. Producers are just looking for a way to just to get their cattle sold and merchandised, and they end up being price takers here just trying to get them moved.
Yeah. Now, what I'm going to say is going to be very unpopular, but this is just, I mean, these are the laws of economics, Greg, and that is that when there is more cattle than there is capacity to process those cattle, and the packers are having no problems getting the cattle that they need on a daily basis, typically that means lower prices. Instead, we see prices come in yesterday. There was some trade or talk of trade at 110. I'm sure today that's going to go back to 115. But, Greg, in reality, the laws of economics suggest that cattle prices ought to be a whole lot cheaper than what they are right now, cash cattle prices.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what you're saying is that packers realize they need their suppliers to survive this. And if they don't survive it, they're not going to have a supply of cattle. A lot of people will argue that point, but I think that's the reality we're looking at.
Yeah, Jerry, the feed yard and packer relationship it's as stressed as it's ever been, isn't it?
Yes, it is. There's a lot of anxiety and anger about what's going on. And, you know, unfortunately, this is the second black swan event that we've experienced in about 7 or 8 months, you know, after the Tyson fire last summer. Yep. And people are upset about what they see, the spread between box beef price and the cash-fed cattle prices. And unfortunately, there's a whole lot of all the bad ideas that have ever been born in the industry are showing up again with people trying to fix it by a bad idea.
Yeah. You know, that,
Jerry, can I
go
jump
ahead,
in,
Greg?
Chip?
Yes.
I'd like to ask Jerry to give us an explanation. I know NCBA had a statement out yesterday that they do not necessarily support the 50-14 rule, 50% negotiated cash trade introduced by Senators Tester and Grassley from Iowa. Tell us about the ramifications of that and what NCBA's policy position is.
NCBA has policy that we believe it's important to protect our members' right to conduct and do business as they see fit that best meets the needs of their individual businesses. And the bill that Senator Grassley has proposed would mandate that many of our producers would have to change the way they're currently selling cattle And the question comes to mind is, what part of government's going to do that? Who's going to determine what's fair and what's legal and what's not? We believe that should be decided by the industry. And in fact, we have a cattle marketing task force that's been trying to address that issue. It's not an easy issue to fix, but we believe it should be an industry-led solution, not a government-mandated solution.
Okay.
Don't we also have several studies that show those marketing agreements actually help provide consumers with a more affordable product?
Yes. You know, if you all recall, in the mid to late 1990s, we just about lost our industry because beef demand was declining at a precipitous rate, and that we had to have a sea change, and value-based marketing came into vogue. And I believe that producers are now getting rewarded for the quality that they produce, and consumers are getting the kind of product that they want to buy. And if you'll see, you know, beef demand is record good right now across the country and around the world, and I think that's a direct result of the sending the proper signals back to the industry to produce the kind of cattle that produce the kind of beef that consumers want to buy.
Okay, Jerry, on the 50-14, is it the percentage of the negotiated sales, or is it the concept? I mean, could you support a 30-14?
If it's government mandated, we're not going to be in favor of that.
Okay.
Does there need to be more price discovery? I think we'd all agree that that's a problem that the industry's got to deal with. But mandating how we do it and mandating that the government will be in charge of that is just the wrong direction, and I think it sends the wrong signal. And in fact, I would suggest that if we have to go back to 50% cash trade, for instance, that there will be less money available to producers in the future, not more. You know, I think there's a thought out there that if we do this, that prices will get higher. And I don't see that. You know, we've got to get the supply and demand back in balance before we're going to have higher prices.
Okay. All right. You mentioned the slaughterhouse issues that we are dealing with, Jerry. There's a proposal circulating out there for a cattle set aside. Market ready cattle go on a maintenance ration for 75 days. The federal support there would be $2.90 per head per day to cover a chunk of those costs. What's NCBA's take on that proposal?
We've got a group that's evaluating that right now. I don't know that we have a conclusion yet, but it would appear that it's getting some traction. I don't know if the government will fund it. I think the theory being that we're backed up right now, if we can do anything to level that supply and maybe return a little more leverage to the pack or to the cattle feeders rather than the packer, would be the benefit of that.
Yep.
We're going to back up cattle regardless of whether they get paid to do it or not.
Yeah, that is certainly true. The coronavirus food assistance program, CFAP, there's some direct payments in there to the cattle producers. I think we're still waiting for the details on what those direct payments would be, right, Jerry?
We're waiting with bated breath, yes. We've been hearing all week that it could be any day. I think this afternoon there is a webinar for producers to sign up and hear from the government on some of the rules that are going to be put in place to get that money. But we're hoping that then either tomorrow or maybe early next week that they'll announce what that's going to look like and how it's going to be distributed and what all the ramifications of it are.
All right. So if you could sit down with Secretary Perdue right now and offer him some advice on the pay cap, what would you tell him?
We need to raise it. You know, the original proposal was for $125,000 per commodity and $250,000 per entity, and that's not going to allow very many people to participate. And I think they've heard that, and it's our belief that that cap will be raised.
Okay, Greg, what else you got?
Well, regarding the backlog, I think it's one of the things that producers want to know about. We're hearing that there may be as many as 1 million head backed up by now, and it could take at least through the end of the fourth quarter to work those cattle through. Is that what you're hearing?
That's pretty much what we're hearing also. We're seeing the packing plant slowly ratchet back up and being able to process more cattle, and so how long that backup lasts will depend on how quickly and how high these packing plants can get. I don't think anybody holds any illusion that we're going to get back to 100% of where we were before the virus hit. Just the way they're having to reconfigure the plants, it's not going to be possible.
Right, right. Jerry, you got a lot of challenges in front of you. Good luck to you, and thank you so much for making time for AgriTalk.
Sure, appreciate all y'all do for us.
All right, thank you. That is Jerry Bone, Pratt Feeders, and President-elect of NCBA. Greg Henderson, thanks, man. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Chip.
We got Kevin Ross, NCGA, up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, it's Thursday. We got the export sales report this morning. What'd you see?
Well, Chip, it wasn't bad for corn. Actually, pretty good number when you combine old and new crop at 1.6 million tons. But trade expected that. Also, fell within expectations for beans and wheat as well. And as a result, we're seeing limited response. Probably the bean market, it's up 1 to 2 cents, is showing the best reaction. But we had daily sales, old and new crop soybeans to China. That's helping us out. And soy oil sales to China. And that's somewhat of an unusual event for that to happen. So more evidence that China's ramping up its ag purchases. Still has a long ways to go, obviously, to meet the phase 1 agreement. But, I think they're getting there and moving in the right direction.
You know, we keep hearing that the crush margins are pretty good in China. But if they're buying bean oil, that's just a sign of strong demand, or they're just trying to spend money on U.S. farm goods.
Well, I think that's some of it. And palm oil, they're probably going to back off their palm oil imports and as a result would ramp up soy oil imports just a little bit at least.
Yeah, mostly negative numbers over in the livestock trade.
Yeah, the export sales numbers really didn't help us there. Marketing year low for beef exports. The pork exports were down significantly from both a week ago and the 4-week average. And like I said, just not giving us any support. And those markets don't really need a reason to go down. We are seeing a little bit of strength starting to form in front month hog futures. So possibly the pullback from the earlier highs this month is ending here. We'll see.
Gotcha. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Throwing shadows in the dark. And the Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Oh, interesting conversation there with Jerry and with Greg, and I want to launch right into another one. We've got the president of the National Corn Growers Association, Kevin Ross, with us. Kevin, it's good to talk with you again. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, Chip. Glad to be on.
Good, good, good. How are things looking over there, Western Iowa? What you got done for corn and soybean planting?
I tell you what, in our immediate area here, it's mostly done. There's a few guys getting wrapped up on some beans, and there might be a little bit of corn out here, but most of it's all on the ground and waiting on some rain in our area. But I personally got wrapped up on Monday, and you know we did some beans early on, and then hit the corn hard and got wrapped up with the rest there on Monday evening. And like I said, we're dry. We need some rain though around here.
Yeah, we were a little dry. We got like 0.4 inches from yesterday afternoon through yesterday evening. I don't know if we're going to get any more up here or not. So we've gotten about 0.8 inches in the last week, and we're okay because of that. But doggone it, it would have been nicer to get 1.5 inches out of this with as much crops we've got in the ground, man.
Yeah, that's for sure. It just, it needs a little bit of a boost to get things, sprouted and going. I think, I was checking some of mine the other day, and it was just barely sprouted, but it's going to need some help to really get moving. And we just haven't gotten anything in our area. We just keep missing these rains. It's all these little 1/10 deals that if we're even getting that. So we're going to need a little help.
Right. Okay. All right. Hey, so USDA is going to have a webinar this afternoon at some point on the CFAP, but have you seen any of the details on the coronavirus food assistance program and the direct payments that are coming from that?
Well, we've talked to USDA and talked with others about the program, but internally I've had discussions there, and the webinar would certainly be something that I'd like to encourage folks to get on to learn more. There's just a lot of details that were yet to be worked out in some of the last conversations that I had. I know the intention of the program, which I thought was very, very good and certainly helpful for farmers, especially for this crop that lost a lot of value, essentially overnight or within a very short period of time. These informational meetings are going to be very important for guys to understand what the program's all about from not just corn standpoint, but other crops as well.
There's been a lot of pushback to the proposed pay cap on there, $125 per commodity, $250 per entity. Is there going to be any movement on that?
I keep hearing there is. That's a double-edged sword. The higher amount we raise these caps to, and certainly that's needed for a lot of different crops and major losses there. This is all things that these limits have to be placed somewhere, but a lot of people are going to hit up against them, that's for sure. Operations are bigger than they once were, and certainly a lot of losses then much larger as well for these operations and these businesses. So it's certainly understandable, the request and the push to do that, and we'll see what comes back. But these dollars and all these programs that are out there right now, it seems like we're printing money all up and down the board. And at some point, somebody's got to pay for all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It is phenomenal. The dollar amounts that we were talking about to try to fill in the hole that we've created by shutting the economy down. And it's kind of a role reversal that we're looking at right now, because in a lot of times it is the row crop guys that we are talking about with the federal programs, and it's very rarely the livestock guys, and that's by choice in a lot of instances. But gosh, the livestock guys are right in the spotlight of this CFAP program, Kevin. And the one thing that is missing from CFAP is the ethanol, the biodiesel side, the biofuel side. It feels to me like if there's a chance to redirect some of the money, maybe it should go to the biofuel side. Am I out of line in suggesting that?
Well, we've certainly been pushing for some help through the ethanol sector. They've certainly had a lot of struggles throughout this, as you would think, yeah, with fuel consumption just being low. But all of our markets are struggling right now, whether that's, livestock or ethanol. It's, everybody's in need of some aid. And it would be nice to see us get something for these ethanol producers and these plants to keep going, make sure they're able to get our grind back moving along like it should be. We're certainly doing our best to advocate for those markets and making sure we've got places to go with our corn. But it's tough. Right now, there's a proposal now with the Heroes Act there out of the House.
Yeah.
To add some funds for biofuels in there. In its current form, I think it's going to be in negotiation for a while with the Senate, who's looking at waiting a while to see kind of what these other stimulus packages do. So encouraging to see that assistance in there, but we're going to need to see what we can get negotiated out and help those plants out.
All right. the $3 trillion Heroes Act, I just don't see it as it stands making its way through the Senate and to the president's desk. But as we're talking about, there are these provisions in there that would help segments of agriculture. At some point, we're going to have to either see a scaled down Heroes Act that doesn't include so much of the what has been described as the Democrats' wish list, and it's going to have to include, it's going to have to be much more targeted, isn't it, Kevin, if it's going to pass?
It certainly is, and I think you're spot on. This thing, as I've heard and had conversations, it, in its current form would be dead on arrival there in the Senate, not what my understanding is. But again, it's a starting point, and there's pieces of these things that hopefully the Senate would pull out and do that. I think there's it's always interesting when you see the political landscape kind of play out and the way this. You see a bill like this come out, and there's a certain amount of grandstanding that's involved, and pieces that are just not even hold a shot to move anywhere. And right. And so that's kind of frustrating in the way that sometimes our government works. But again, it's a starting point,
right?
And hopefully that some of these pieces are able to be pulled out and used.
Okay. All right. Trade issues, Kevin. President Trump right now, he's searching for ways to deal with China. And the phase one side of things, it needs some enforcement, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. I was on some conversations yesterday with one of the major ag companies, and we were talking exactly about that enforcement of the intellectual property side of things and biotech issues that are in China. They've got a lot of laws that are actually in place there that really it would just help if there is major enforcement done. If they could get some of that that aspect of it done, I think we would be in a lot better shape. But there are pieces of this phase one deal that definitely are helping in the biotech arena, and really I don't want to say streamlining. I don't think we're there yet, but certainly improving their process of biotech approvals and things like that. So positive things there, and certainly some positive movement on the purchases. We're seeing some corn purchases in China, and that's certainly positive. Mm-hmm. But we got to get we got to get some of the ethanol moving there too. That's one of the biggest things we can do to help the ethanol industry is, and we really thought this would be. Some of the pieces that would fall into place, but there's still a big tariff there. So, I'd really encourage them to get phase two moving. Obviously, there's a ton of issues around, China and just the certain sentiments there, right? Because of the coronavirus. It doesn't change the fact there's still a huge economy and somebody that needs food and that we need to trade with in the ag world.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. Kevin, we've got about a minute left here. What is the message from National Corn Growers out to the membership?
Well, just appreciate everybody's hard work this spring, and hopefully they stayed safe. And we're still fighting every day to make sure that the best interests of the corn farmer are looked out for in these different packages. And we're going to have some very interesting conversations over the course of the next few months and year with our membership and other folks in input talking about our industry and how we move this thing forward.
Yeah. And we're going to have to figure out exactly what this new normal will look like on many different levels through the corn industry, aren't we?
We are. It's going to change. I think and we've got a lot of carryout that we're going to have to deal with. But corn's a hugely important crop to our country, and that doesn't change one bit. And we're here to make sure that the corn farmers looked out for.
Let's put the challenge out. Find us another billion bushels of corn demand out there, Kevin. We can grow it. We just need to find a way to use it, man.
Hey, I'll do my best, my friend.
All right. That is Kevin Ross. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. It's Kevin Ross, president of the National Corn Growers Association. Phone line is always open to you, Kevin. Give us a holler anytime you need to get a message out. Okay, when we come back, I've got a couple of tweets that I want to address. We're going to do a pull some highlights of the conversation that we just had with Jerry and Kevin. All right, that's up next on AgriTalk. Welcome back to AgriTalk.
Did that come through?
Yeah, it did. I heard it.
Okay.
There they are, the angry guys.
Well, they're not angry. They're just very enthusiastic. They've been lifting weights when we recorded that. It was the thing. Yeah. All fired up.
Yep. I see. I got you. All right. There's a lot. Hey. You know, we've got Michael Clark and we've got Kirk Hinz on this afternoon to talk weather. Mm-hmm. Let people know if they want to ask a question or have a specific area covered, let them know how they can do that, Davis.
Well, the easiest way is probably using the hashtag on Twitter, AgriTalk. Hashtag it AgriTalk. Hashtag AgriTalk.
Hashtag AgriTalk.
Was that hypnotic enough for you, Chip?
Yes, very good, very good.
You're getting very AgriTalk.
Okay, so I had to look at a reply to a tweet there real quick. So this is real time stuff.
Yep.
Having someone from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association on AgriTalk, I knew what that was going to do. It was going to open up AgriTalk to ridicule. It was going to open up AgriTalk to praise. It was going to potentially turn into a some sort of a show that nobody wants to really talk about. Okay.
Well, it's a can of worms, and emotions
are
very high.
It's a can of worms. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And at Adam Lash 1 said, Chip, please ask why NCBA continues to appear so tone deaf to the needs of cattle producers. They continue to make missteps that come across as uncaring and elitist. That has happened. And believe it or not, I have made missteps on AgriTalk that make me appear uncaring and elitist.
What?
I did it in Pro Farmer quite often, and I got called on it.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. When you're trying to deal with such a diversified group like we are talking about, the cattleman is the largest single sector in agriculture. It ranges from a guy that's got 4 or 5 head of beef cows all the way up to Pratt feeders or bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cactus feeders. With so much diversity and so many differing points of view, the target, I don't care if you're RCAF, if you're U.S. Cattlemen's, if you're Beef Alliance, if you're NCBA, if you're the Beef Board, if your whatever group is trying to represent the needs of a group as wide and as diverse as cattlemen are in this country, you're gonna piss somebody off from time to time. It happens. And admittedly, right now, it's happening a lot. And NCBA being the primary is got a target on them. And I get what you're saying, Adam. They have come off as uncaring and elitist from time to time. They have. And it is difficult. And you've heard me say this before. The cattlemen out there, there are some that say, hey, you know what? We are beef producers. We are 100% beef producers. I understand that I've got 10,000 head of cattle on feed out there. But they are all beef. And then you could have someone that's got 10,000 head of cattle on feed, and they say, I am not a beef producer. I raise cattle. So two guys in exactly the same situation with 10,000 head of beef on feed, and they can have two completely different attitudes, viewpoints, opinions about what they are raising. One will say it is cattle, cattle, cattle. The other one will say it is beef, because if those cattle weren't carrying beef, then this would be a damn expensive hobby.
Yeah.
Because what I end up selling is the beef off of those animals. And I do not envy the role that they are playing. It is something that I've watched develop over a long period of time, and RCAF has something to offer to the industry. They do. They offer. RCAF has some very, very good points that they make and contribute to the conversation in the industry, contribute to the well-being of the industry. I can say the same thing about NCBA. I can say the same thing about U.S. Cattlemen. I can say that same thing about Beef Alliance. They all contribute good things. But if you are in the industry and you do not favor the industry, if I'm an NCBA supporter and I look at what RCAF is doing, it doesn't matter what RCAF says. It could benefit me greatly. But because RCAF says it, more than likely, since I'm an NCBA supporter, I'm going to say, you know what? It doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
Doesn't make any sense. They never have made any sense, and they will never make any sense. And the same thing about an RCAF supporter will say the same thing about NCBA. We need to lose we need to open our minds, I guess, to the idea that everybody's got different opinions in this cattle industry. We need to be a little more open to the idea that Jack down the road, who is an RCAF member and hates NCBA, while I'm a member of NCBA, Jack and I should be able to get together and have a civilized conversation about what really needs to happen in this industry. I hope that is what we are promoting here on AgriTalk, because I want to have that civilized conversation about what should happen in the cattle industry and what can happen, what should happen, what could happen in the cattle industry. I want that to happen here on AgriTalk.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you, sir. All right, come back this afternoon. We've got the guys from BAMWX.com, and we're talking about something much less controversial, weather, right here on AgriTalk.